Welcome to the third episode of John Book's very own podcast. Once again, I am John Book, your host for the show. We have a fantastic show today. Our guest is Lara Bundock. She is one of the founders of the Snowdrop Project, a project which provides care for those rescued out of human trafficking here in Sheffield. It's a fantastic interview, and I think we have a few people who are tuning in just for that. If you are, she'll come in about the 15-minute mark. Until then, you're putting up with me. And it's a Sunday when I'm recording here in Sheffield. We've had a really busy but good last couple of weeks. Let's see what to tell you. Well, 2 weeks ago, we went on our first scouting trip to a potential city for a church plant. My wife and I are heading up a team of people that are going to plant a new church out of our church here in Sheffield. And we visited a city with our friends Dustin and Julie 2 weeks ago. I can't tell you which city. We had a really interesting time. We ended up unknowingly parking our car and exploring a neighborhood that was mostly made up of Pakistanis. But this street, we didn't know, we found out the next day, was the street on which a very famous evangelist that most of you will have heard of lived about 100 years ago. And we were just a few, maybe a block and a half or so down from where he lived. And we met some policemen there, and they said there was virtually no crime in the area. I'm not sure there is a connection, but it was cool that we just ended up in the very, very area where he lived and ministered. And that was really good. We don't know if that's the city or not. We're going to explore a few more. But that's that. And then another really cool thing is my wife and I also lead Antioch School of Transformation, which is a discipleship and church planting training school. And yesterday we had our first Evangelism Day of the New Year. We joined up with some people from some other churches to do something called Healing on the Streets, where we just tried to meet people on the streets, invite them to come in for prayer to this little garden area if they needed prayer for healing for anything, and share the gospel with them. We saw 10 people come to the Lord yesterday, including 5 teenage girls all at once, 2 other teenage girls who then got baptized in the fountain right outside the gardens, and how many is that, 7? And 3 others as well. Standing with a girl called Kelly from the serve team that's here, and she was just faithfully for like an hour and a half passing out flyer after flyer, inviting people to come in for healing. These 4 guys in their mid-20s sort of walked by and kind of brushed her off, but one of them was like, no, praying for healing? My shoulder's messed up. Heal it. Kind of half confrontational, but half sincere. So I kind of looked at him and I was like, well, okay, here we go. Put my hand on his shoulder, said, Jesus' name, be healed, shoulder. Just as simple as that. Took my hand away. He got this really confused look on his face. Started looking around, moving his shoulder real fast. He's like, what? How did you do that? No, guys, for real, the pain is gone. It hurt just a second ago. Now there's no more pain. I mean, he kept saying, it's not fixed. I can feel that it's not fixed, but it's, what was that? What was that? And got to stand and share some of my testimony with him, explain some of what Jesus came to do, and that was really cool. I hope to see him again. His name was Sebastian. So 10 people, and God is moving here. It's amazing. We had our first 2 bits of listener feedback, which is amazing. I have a listener feedback email, which is veryownpodcast@yahoo.com. And last time I asked the question, what is inspiring you right now? I got 2 emails, and I've also received 2 spam. So I'm not sure that I'm having equal number of emails and spam in a brand new email account. Both spams, one from Russia, one from Africa, assured me that if I just help out this millionaire, or maybe it's the former king, I don't remember, if I just help him out a little bit, I will get to share in his fortune. The Russia guy was actually generous enough to offer me a 60-40 deal. I would get 40% of his millions and millions of dollars or pounds. So I've sent along some of my bank information, just testing the waters with that. But anyway, I got 2 pieces of real feedback. One was from Kat, who said right now what's inspiring her are some books by George MacDonald, specifically one called The Gentle Woman's Choice. Now, if you're not familiar with George MacDonald, he was an author in the late 19th century, I believe, early 20th maybe, who later was a great inspiration to people like C.S. Lewis and Tolkien. In some ways, he's the father of modern fantasy. I do know that C.S. Lewis used him as a character in The Great Divorce, because I guess C.S. Lewis got a lot of inspiration from him. So The Gentlewoman's Choice. Thanks, Kat. And then I got another email from Sue. And she mentioned two things. First, she asked two questions. One, did I think that the song You Can't Always Get What You Want by the Rolling Stones, when Mick Jagger sings, you can't always get what you want, but if you try sometimes, you just might find you get what you need. Do I think he's speaking something true there? Is he on to something? So that was the first question. The second one was basically, should she feel guilty for not really liking most Christian contemporary music that she hears on the radio, and for connecting better with stuff that she hears on oldie stations or other non-religious radio? And yes, she of course should feel guilty. No, I'm just kidding. No, that's an interesting question. I'd love to hear some more thoughts from our listeners about that. But from my point of view, I completely understand. I feel like a lot of what's on Christian radio is produced a certain way and is written a certain way that's really hard to connect with sometimes. Not that there's never good songs on there, but sometimes it just feels inauthentic, overplanned. I'm not sure how to explain it. But I have a great passion for finding music by Christians that is real and creative and original music and that expresses things about God. Maybe it's worship, maybe it's not, but also about life and the struggles and the victories of life and different issues. Most of those that I find won't be played on CCM, but I just want to assure you that there is amazing music out there. But kind of the two questions touch on something that's interesting. We tend to use the word secular and sacred sometimes when talking about these things, and I just wanted to briefly address that. I think those are bad categories. I don't want to give a whole like study right now, but I think that they're not really exactly scriptural categories. Anything that's true, that's absolutely true, and I use the word absolute in the true sense of the word, is absolutely true, is God's truth. So if it's being spoken by someone who doesn't know God yet, or maybe doesn't believe in God, it's still true, and it's still God's truth. Likewise, if someone is a Christian artist, so to speak, and says something that's not exactly lined up with what God would say, then that thing is false. And I actually think those are better distinctions as we kind of try and relate to the world, especially as we deal with art, what's true and what's false. I know you can't always tell that, but I would say in this case, you could definitely interpret what Mick Jagger is singing as something true. And you can definitely interpret some of Christian radio as maybe inauthentic, which not real, which maybe makes it false. I think those are more helpful distinctions, but I'd love to hear more what you guys think. That's not going to be our official question of the week. That's coming up in a minute. But speaking of really good creative artists who love God, there is this Tuesday a new Gungor album out called A Creation Liturgy. It's a live album. Because they did a Kickstarter campaign for it, I got a chance to get it a week early. And I just want to say, it is phenomenal. It is really good. Now, live albums are kind of hit or miss. Some live albums just seem to be cheap money-making ploys where they're just playing the songs from their last tour and there's nothing new about them, there's nothing fresh about them. But then some live albums really capture something. A moment of passion or intensity that comes in when you hear live music that isn't captured on CD form. And I know that that was what Gungor was set out to do in making this live album. And sometimes bands, you know, rework songs or add new flourishes, and Gungor definitely also does that. So I can say that I strongly recommend that if you have some money to go towards music, this is a really good purchase. It is very beautiful and artistic work, but also very worshipful. Some of the standout tracks to me, they've done this thing where they combine The Earth Is Yours with Craigs and Clay, and the combination is really, really powerful. The version of Dry Bones adds these new acoustic guitar and cello flourishes, the versions of The End Is Not the End in one of their songs have this sort of spoken word slam poetry thing happening throughout it. And I don't know, I've been using it a lot over the last few days to connect with God. It's really, really good. I've been playing it some of the in the background here as I talk about it. Gungor, Creation Liturgy, get it. He also has a book out that I'm really looking forward to reading. I may talk about it in the future. But before we get to our interview, I did want to finally bring up our question of the week. This week's question of the week, I mentioned a couple of weeks ago, and no one really commented on it, that we are having the royal family over to dinner sometime soon. Now, specifically, I am referring to Prince William and Catherine, Kate. I sent them an invitation about a month ago before some of the problems they've been having really blew up. And so I just kind of assume that they've gotten it and they're considering it and they'll get back to us soon. So when we do have them over for dinner, my question for you guys is, what should we talk about? Any questions we should ask them? I'd love to hear your thoughts. And you can email those to veryownpodcast@yahoo.com. Now, I thought it would be fun to kind of read the letter that I wrote them, because some of you think I'm joking, but we really did invite them to dinner. So that is what I'm going to do now. I'm going to read you the letter that we sent about a month ago to HRH, His Royal Highness, the Duke and Duchess of Cambridge. Dear Sir and Madam, hello, William and Catherine. Never written a letter quite like this before, so I feel I should introduce myself first. My name is John Book, and I live with my wife of 12 years, Ira, and our two hilarious children, Nadia, age 4, and Joshua, 19 months, in Sheffield. I have enclosed a picture here. We are, in my humble opinion, an awesome family. In short, the reason that I'm writing is that we would like to invite the two of you over to our house for dinner, away from the eyes of the press, if possible. We can schedule it at your leisure. We'll make you guys either some authentic Tex-Mex food, I'm from Texas, or authentic Uzbek food. My wife is from Uzbekistan. If you have time after the kids are asleep, we can play a board game or just chat. Okay, so I realize that the chances of you even seeing this letter are slim, much less the chances of you accepting this random invitation. I may even sound foolish. So I'm going to explain why we are inviting you in the briefest terms possible. To do so, I need to tell you just a little bit about us. As I mentioned, I'm an American and my wife is a Russian who was born and raised in Uzbekistan, though she is now a U.S. citizen as well. We met in Uzbekistan, where I lived for 3 years on Christian mission. We were married in 2000 in a Chinese restaurant in Uzbekistan at a wedding attended by around 75 people. You know, very similar to your wedding. It was a long-time dream of mine to live and do Christian work in England, and in 2009 we finally moved here, settling in Sheffield to work with a non-denominational Protestant church whose website you can see here. My wife and I run a year-long training course attended by people in their 20s and 30s. The purpose of the course is for students to grow in depth in their Christian faith, examining how their beliefs shape their character and life choices, and being practically equipped to serve the world better. The course climaxes with an international trip. This past April, we took several students to Bangalore, India to serve there and saw some amazing things we'd love to tell you about. So that's a little bit about us. Now here's what precipitated this invitation. Back in January, I had a very vivid dream. This was one of those dreams that feel emotionally very real, the kinds of dreams that leave you confused for the first few seconds after you wake up and realize you were merely dreaming. Now I almost never remember my dreams, but this one stuck with me. In it, I was sitting in our home in Sheffield, in Hillsborough, when the landline telephone rang. I answered it, and after a second or two of computer noises, a very official-sounding voice spoke. "Is this the home of John and Ira Book in Sheffield?" "Yes," I answered. "Am I speaking with John Book?" "Yes." "Please hold for an important call." There were some more clicking noises and static sounds, and a new voice came on. "Hello, John, this is Prince William," you said. "You explained to us that Kate and I have been married for a few months now, and it's going well, but we find it difficult to make real new friendships with people while the press is always watching us. So what we've done is pick the name of a young family in England at random, yours, and we'd like to take you out to dinner and just see if we hit it off. It has to be done in secret. Are you interested?" So we met you for dinner, and we did, in fact, hit it off, becoming very close friends. The rest of the dream was a vague montage of us doing things together. Holidays, games, laughing, sharing meals, etc. I believe our friends Dustin and Julie joined us sometimes as well. That's all I remember. That was the whole dream. A bit silly, but it felt powerfully real, real enough that I'm embarrassed to admit. When I saw your pictures in a paper a few days later, my first thought was, oh, I miss those guys. Now, I don't know if you feel any of the things you said in the dream, or if we'd hit it off at all. I actually quite doubt that you are lonely. I also realized that it was only a dream, one that people seem to find amusing and ridiculous. I mean, it sounds like the beginning of a movie, some sort of comedy. But then I saw you guys frequently on the coverage of the Olympics, and you seemed to be having a lot of fun in the same ways we would, very endearing ways. One evening, as we watched the competitions, my wife said, you should actually write them and invite them over. Why not? So that's what I'm doing. Crazy, I know, but the invitation is there. If you take us up on it, we promise to do our part to guard your privacy, and if you can make it to us without reporters finding out, we will make sure it is kept secret. So if you're interested in an evening of food, stories, and games with a random family in Sheffield you've never met before, we'd love to have you. Why not? Yours sincerely, John Book. So that's that letter. I'm sure we'll hear back from them any day now. And it has set off an interesting train of thought. As I mentioned before, we are in the midst of praying about where to plant a new church. And we've had several words that from God that have indicated that when it's time to know, we will know very clearly where the place is. So I have this whole scenario in my head where they come over here and we talk to them and they're like, actually, we know several people within the royal family and staff who are interested in, you know, following God at a deeper level. We want to invite you to come and pastor us and, start a church amongst our community. And then we call the people on our team, Dustin and Julie and Luke and Emma and Rachel, over to the house and say, get over here right now. We can't tell you why, but just get to the house. And they all come in and there sit William and Kate, and they all have these different reactions. And then we move there and yeah, it goes on and on. Ridiculous, I know. But write me, tell me what you think we should talk about when they do come over. Up next, conversations. All right, my guest for conversations this week is Laura Bundock. Hi, Laura.
Hi, John.
How are you?
I am very well, thank you.
You are covered with paint right now.
I'm covered with paint. I was just about to mention
that. I'm sure the audience had observed that. So why are you covered with paint?
I have been painting walls and ceilings and cats. I didn't mean to paint the cat. It just got in the way.
How did the cat react?
I think it was quite happy. It kept climbing up my leg for like it wanted more.
Yes.
So,
do you have Pepe Le Pew here?
It rings a bell, but I'm not sure why.
Never mind.
Yes, but I have paint on my face because I was painting the ceiling with a really long paint stick thing, and then it snapped, and so the roller just came straight down on my face.
Oops.
Yeah.
Okay, so you are the founder, director, presidente, project manager of something called the Snowdrop Project. Now, I was actually in the States over the summer when you had your launch, so I never really heard kind of the history. Can you just tell us briefly what is the Snowdrop Project? But I also want to know, how'd you come up with that name?
Yes, okay, I can answer all those things. The Snowdrop Project is an organization that has been set up to help victims of human trafficking. Not when they've first been rescued. When they've first been rescued, there's already something that is set up for them, which I'm also part of.
No, is this just in Sheffield?
It's nationwide, but I just work in one in Sheffield. And it's called City Hearts, and it's an amazing organisation. And that helps to look after victims of human trafficking when they've been rescued initially. And they help them decide whether it's safe for them to go home, whether it's not safe for them to go home and they need to stay in this country. And if they do want to stay in this country, we work out ways for them to stay here. If we manage to help them stay here, there comes a time when they then get moved into the local community, which is great. But unfortunately, then the funding and all the support kind of drops off. There isn't any support for them. And actually, we found that that's a problem across the nation. And so there is the immediate aftercare that's been set up. But after 45 days, which is the amount that's set down by guidance in the government, all the support drops off once they've moved into the community. Mm. And so they move into the community, and sometimes they move into new houses, which is great, but the houses have no furniture, the walls are unpainted, there's nothing on the floors, they're usually in bad repair, they're usually pretty dirty, and they're just expected to move into the houses with no help and no assistance, and they're just expected to start living there as well. And that's quite traumatic for a lot of the people, because they've been through a lot of trauma already, and then to suddenly be dumped out on your own and trying to live in a new country, a new culture.
So most of them are from other countries?
Most of them are from other countries.
Mostly women, yes. I assume.
In Sheffield, we deal with women. There are houses across the UK that deal with men and families, but at the moment in Sheffield, we focus on women.
Okay. Trafficked families.
Yes.
Why would a whole family be trafficked?
Lots of different purposes. I mean, a whole family could get trafficked and the whole family becomes involved in the slave trade. They might be exploited through farms or factories or things like that. Or they could then use each individual member of the family for different types of exploitation. So if they can successfully traffic a whole family, then it can be quite lucrative for the trafficker, because they have an income not just from one person, but from two, three, four people.
Yeah. Is it a big problem here in the UK?
Trafficking?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge problem. Across the globe, it's the second highest organised crime, and that's under drugs, but it's one of the fastest growing crimes. To kind of give you an idea, there are about 670 rescued in about 3 months, which was great, but they reckon that's only the tip of the iceberg. They're estimating that's about 2-3% of people that are actually caught in the slave trade.
Who's doing this trafficking? Is it English or?
It varies. It really, really varies as to who it is. It's hard for me to say, but often we find that people from their own countries into England, but then those people may have connections within England that they pass them on to.
So does Snowdrop Project then work with City Hearts? Like, City Hearts cares for people on the front end, and then when that's running low,
when the time is up and the girls have to leave the house and go into the community, then City Hearts will refer into the Snowdrop Project, and there'll be a careful handover process, and it'll be handed over from a caseworker in City Hearts to a caseworker in the Snowdrop Project, who will then be able to continue the work that's been started in the house, but also then look to longer term support as well. So looking at how can we help them get into possibly education, or helping them find work experience or a job, helping them find healthy communities that they can get involved in. Eventually I would really love to see the possibility of running, I guess, community classes and things like that, helping to teach them about healthy relationships and friendships and things like that. Because actually, sometimes they don't have a good grid for for relationships and friendships, because sometimes they've been trafficked from such a young age that it's not ever been modelled to them.
Wow. So the painting and stuff you're helping remodel someone's home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, it was brilliant. One of our girls it's unsafe for her to go home. And so she's successfully managed to stay in the UK. And she's just been given a permanent house by the council, which is amazing. But when we went in...
I've seen some of those houses.
Yeah.
They're awful.
Yeah, when we went in, they're literally like wallpaper, like peeling off the walls, dirt about 2 inches deep on one side of the floor, curtains falling down, massive holes in the walls. Really not very nice at all.
How did this first come to your attention, or how did you first get a heart for this?
For looking after and working with trafficked people, or for the Snowdrop Project, because those are two different stories.
pick which one you like better.
That's hard. I like both. I guess I'll do how I got involved with working with trafficked people. Yeah, I finished my master's in social work, which was great. And by the grace of God, I got a very high mark, which was lovely, and had the potential of a couple of different jobs. And I didn't quite know what to go for. And actually, I didn't feel led towards any of them. I didn't feel like I wanted to do any of them. But I didn't know what I wanted to do. I just knew that there was something. And then I went to a conference over in America, and to cut a kind of long story short, when I was there, there was a lady called Christine Kane speaking, who is part of the A21 project. And she was speaking about social justice, but with a particular slant on anti-trafficking. And as she started to speak about it, I had heard before of all these kind of things, and it had often moved me. But when she spoke, I just cried all my way through this talk, and I am quite emotional, but I just cried. And as a Christian, I take things to God. And so as she was speaking, I just said to God, if I could use my degree for anything, this is what it would be for. This would be how I would use it. And I felt like personally God then responded and said, this is what I am asking you to do. You have to respond today. And so I went forwards afterwards for prayer. And this woman who didn't know me, it's a room of thousands of people, came over and prayed for me. And she said, I don't think I'm meant to be praying for you just for social justice. I think you're meant to work with victims of human trafficking. And I was like, oh, okay, yep. So then she prayed for me, and then when she finished praying, she said, I don't normally say this either, but she said, this isn't for the future. There's a real urgency in what I'm saying, and I think you need to respond today or tomorrow. Like, you have to do something about this.
Wow.
And so then I kind of spoke to God again as a Christian, and I said, God, this is great, but I don't seem to have a door into working with these people. How do I do it? And he reminded me of an organization in Sheffield called City Hearts, and he said, I want you to go and volunteer for them, which was hard because I was like, I have a degree. but I flew home the next day, and I called City Hearts, and I met with the manager, and I explained to them who I was and what my degree was. And they just stared at me, and they were like, we just opened this house like a month ago for trafficked victims. And we have been praying for the last month that God would send us a social worker, but we can't afford to pay you. And I said, well, that's okay, because God told me to volunteer for you, so that's okay. And so then she said, okay, well, can you start tomorrow? And so I said, sure, I don't really have anything else to do.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Okay, now you never answered. How did you come up with the name Snowdrop Project?
It's the Snowdrop Project, for people who don't know what a snowdrop is, it's a flower. It's a British flower that is the first flower to push through after the winter. So it's usually the first one that you see after the snow has fallen, and then it comes through, hence snowdrop. And it comes through after the snow. And so the idea is it's the first one that comes through after hardship and difficult times, and
like it
pushes through and flourishes. And so the idea is that that's what our vision is and our hope is for these women, and potentially men and families, is that they have been through horrendous hardships and terrible times, but that they will push through and they'll flourish at the end of it.
That's great.
And so
that's way better than the name I came up with.
What did you come up with?
The thing that helps people in need.
Yes, that could be our subtitle. We'll have that as an under.
really quickly, people listening around, what's your greatest need from just people anywhere? Is it money? Is it what, prayer? What is it?
Yeah, it's both. I mean, both of those things, definitely. I never thought I would be somebody to say yes, money, but it is amazing how much money impacts. Our real dream is to have an office, eventually to have storage space where we can store furniture. We are at the moment coming up with a website where people will be able to go on the website and click on objects in a house, and they will be able to specifically buy an object for a house so that we can furnish it. But the other things that money will go towards is things like eventually funding our caseworkers, and like there are things to take into account. And we also want to be able to afford to take on board a counsellor who can see our women for a long period of time. at the moment they can only see them for 45 days, and that's right. once a week. So usually they get like a month, 2 months of counselling, and that's it. And that's really not enough.
Yeah.
So
if they wanted to give,
yes.
What's the best way?
Contact
the podcast. I can pass it on to you.
Yeah. Or... yeah. People could contact you. There is an email address that people could contact. Which is Acts of Mercy, which is ACTSOFMERCY
yes.
_ UK
okay.
at fastmail.fm.
Great. Thank you so much, Laura.
It's pleasure.
Fantastic. Okay. And now, as usual, we are going to play Top of the Head. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, gosh.
You got your questions?
Yes.
Okay. My first question for you. I'll give you an easy one. Would you rather be able to fly or be invisible?
Oh, fly. I would really like to fly because I love flying. That's obvious. But yes, I would love to fly to go to any country I could possibly want to go to.
Awesome.
And I actually don't want to be invisible. I would hate that. I would really not want to be invisible.
I could have guessed that.
Yeah.
Okay, your turn.
Okay, you are going on vacation and you can only take two objects with you and only one of them can be practical and serious. What are they?
Well, is an iPod practical?
Yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Is a Kindle practical?
I love that they're all technical.
Well, because I used to carry piles of CDs and piles of books whenever I went on holiday.
Oh.
So those devices were bought to reduce that. I don't know. Money?
Okay, well, that's your practical one.
Okay, money and, where am I going? Depends on where I'm going, I suppose.
Where would you like to go? Quick.
I would like to go to Italy
next week.
And,
Yeah,
I'm going to bring my own colander to drain my own pasta. I don't know why. Okay. Edith, Mary, or Sybil, which Downton Abbey daughter are you most like?
Oh, that's really hard. I really want to say Sybil because she's really adventurous and I love her. I think she's amazing and she's just a little bit quirky. But I have to say a little bit Mary because it's terrible, but I am a little bit middle class and I like the nice things. And so I'm probably in between the two. I really like to adventure.
I think you're more Sybil.
Okay, yay!
Thank you,
yay! If you could be a kind of biscuit, what kind of biscuit would you be and why?
If I could be a kind of biscuit, I would be a hot, freshly baked chocolate chip cookie.
Ooh, yeah.
Because I'm gooey on the inside, but sweet all the way through. I don't know, this is top of that. I don't know. All right. If you could have been born as a native of any different non-English speaking ethnicity, where would you have been born and what ethnicity?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Would you be Norwegian? Would you be Chinese? What would you be?
Okay, yes, off the top of my head. I think I'm answering off the top of my head because I've recently worked with a girl from Malaysia. And I've also visited Malaysia and Borneo, and I just loved it there. I really love the culture, I really love the people. The only thing is, I would be an extremely tall person for that culture. I really stuck out when I
went there. You're not you, you're born as a
kid. That's fine, yeah. Good, because when I went there, I think everybody looked at me like I was a freak, because I was really tall.
Okay,
so in The Matrix, you can have anything downloaded into your brain, any skill.
Mm-hmm.
Downloaded. If you could be in the Matrix and have a skill downloaded into your brain, what would it be?
Mastery over guitar and piano.
Ah, do you know what? I was going to ask you about that. Was my other option of questions with music.
All right, last one for you.
Yes.
What is one of your least favorite common personality traits? What's a big turnoff for you in someone's personality?
What a question. Can I do something that somebody might do? Like, is that a personality trait?
Yeah, sure.
Do you know what I really hate?
What?
I really, really can't stand it. When people make a cup of tea, and then they just put the tea bag beside the cup when the bin is right there, and then they leave this little pile of tea bags right on the side, and it really, really riles me up. I just think it's the height of laziness when the bin is right there, and you just leave, oh my goodness.
People do that all the time. I thought that was a common English thing.
Regularly. If people could see my face now, they would see how much this
problem is. It is livid, and it's covered in paint. all right. Thank you, Laura.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, John. It's been great.
That is all the time that we have for this week. Tune in 2 weeks when I will be talking about some stuff and interviewing someone. It's going to be amazing. Thanks for listening.